which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll start off with awards and presentations. Jim, are you?
Yes. That's Madam Chairperson. And Michael Morrissey. Michael, where are you at? Come on up. 5 years.
Half a decade.
It goes quick, doesn't it?
Yes, it did.
Michael's being recognized tonight for 5 years of service. He is our power plant operator mechanic. Congratulations, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Stop right here and smile.
Get a pretty one, yeah.
Here we go. One, two, three. One more.
That's a nice picture.
Congratulations, Michael.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. And we're also Stephen Phoebus.
Stephanie.
Stephanie, come on.
Stephanie's
You're the prettiest Stephen I've ever seen.
Stephanie's being recognized also for 5 years of service. She's one of our part-time customer service representatives too. Congratulations, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie,
for this last 5 years.
Juliana as well is being recognized for 5 years of service. She's one of our part-time customer service representatives too. Congratulations, Juliana. Is being recognized for 25 years of service. He is your Vice President of Power Supply. Congratulations, Larry. Neva's being recognized for 25 years of service. She is our GIS analyst. Congratulations, Neva.
And in the fall, we're going to be inducting Navia and Larry into the Quarter Century Club. And remember, once in the Quarter Century Club,
always
in the Quarter Century Club. Can't deny your way out.
Oh, my gosh.
You'll always be in the Quarter Century Club.
Alberto is being recognized for 25 years. He's one of our linemen first class. Congratulations, Alberto.
Generated an alarm. By catching this, he prevented a different unit, which would have meant loss of generation and thousands of dollars lost. This work ethic makes what Now, he represents every employee this month. He's representing the employees as the employee. And I can't think of anybody more deserving to represent all of the employees in the union this month than you. I'd like to introduce you to our board of directors. Chairperson, Jean Denny.
Congratulations. Something for you to look at and know that we really appreciate you.
George King.
They read services, and this is a gift back from the Historic Society.
And Director Jeffrey.
Thank you, and here's a check.
Hi.
A day with pay, a day off with pay. And so you can become my twin.
Congratulations, and thank you so much for all you do. That'll give you an evening out at a play or something, if you'd like.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That brings us to hear the audience. I think we do have somebody that's here that wishes to address us.
I didn't think that many people were going to talk.
I wondered for a minute.
Right here? Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, I have a few things. Hello, my name is Leslie Scott. I am the director of the Guardian Ad Litem program in Osceola County, and I've been the director for 20 years. And I didn't get anything from the state of Florida, so, you know, I think this is a place to work. I just wanted to address you all today on, I'm sure most of you are familiar with what the Guardian Ad Litem program does. We are appointed by the court to advocate for the best interest of abused and neglected children in our community. So when a child is removed from the home due to allegations of abuse and neglect, the judge appoints a guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem advocates for the best interest. We have volunteers. We have almost 200 volunteers in the community who go out, see the children, and tell the court what we believe is in the child's best interest. You know, like I said, I've been here 20 years. I've had this job for 20 years. I have the best job in Osceola County because every day I feel like we make a difference in a child's life. I guess in my 20 years, this is probably one of the neediest times we've had. As far as the kids that are coming into foster care, we see the worst of the worst. And what we, and foster care is not a place for kids to grow up, and we want to get them with back home or with relatives. But one of the things that kids that are in foster care or with relatives, they're so needy of the things that our kids have, you know, whether that's being able to do extracurricular activities, et cetera, whether they need clothes. I say sometimes they just come into care with the dirty clothes on their back. And that's why we have a nonprofit called Voices for Osceola's Children that's been around 30 years that raises funds for these unmet needs of our kids in the community that come into the foster care system. So I'd like to turn it over right now. I know I just have a few minutes to Wanda Lynn Scott, who also I have with me also Kathy Wandell, who is the president of Voices for Osceola's Children and has been the president for 10 years. She's also a guardian ad litem volunteer. She's with us, and I also wanted to turn it over to Wanda Lynn Scott, who is the chair, our fundraising chair for the our gala, our Casino Royale gala. So I'm going to turn it over to Wanda.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And Wanda's also a guardian ad litem.
Yes, I have recently had one of my 18-year-olds, she aged out of the system, was accepted to FSU. Sorry, Gator fans, but full scholarship. She is brilliant, part of the foster system. And I was just recently ward of a 2-month-old drug baby. So talk about breaking your heart. But thank you for hearing us today. I am Wanda Lynn Scott. I am a guardian ad litem, also the chair for the Voices of Osceola's Children. In your packet, you will see we're doing a gala event on September the 10th. We are here asking for KUA to sponsor the Guardian of Hope. It's on page 2. in great consideration for what we can do for the children. We recently had a grandmother who was a caregiver request $100. And with that $100, she wanted to provide swimming lessons for her child that she was in care of. So if you go think about $100 could save that child's life and possibly could even save other children's lives if they became a great swimmer and were able to lifeguard and save other children. Do you have any questions of me at this time, or Kathy, or Leslie, in reference to our request?
What are you requesting?
On page 2, Guardian of Hope is our major...
Which page of what?
Page 2.
On the... No, Jeannie. On the 8 and a half by 11.
She has a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. Page 2 of the packet at the very top.
Okay, perfect.
Guardian of Hope is our major sponsor. And if you consider right now in Osceola County, on the average, we have about 500 children in foster care, just in Osceola County. That's about $30 a child, if you break it down. We have had such a great need this year for our children. I'm sorry?
Just thank you for that information.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
The board have any questions? I will say one thing. This is to hear the audience, and we cannot take any action on this. But we will ask the staff to look at it.
Okay.
And then we'll let you know what happens.
Okay. Great.
Chris will be in charge.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
This is part of the September fundraiser.
Yes, sir.
But thank you for your presentation. Thank you for everything you do. I know it's a difficult job, and there's a great need in Osceola County for so many services.
Yes, thank you very much.
But I want to lead up with it. Actually, our budget starts October the 1st.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And so that's when I asked the question. That's in September.
Yes, sir. And what we would be, because the event is in September and we go on a calendar year, it would be the commitment from KUA, understanding that your budget actually starts on October 1st.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to let everybody know, and you to know too, the board does not act under hear the audience. They just hear the audience. And as far as I've checked with Chris before the meeting, just before the meeting, that you're just after a commitment, so it would be into our next budget year. The problem is right now there is no budget. The budget will be passed or will be considered for passage by the board at the July meeting, next meeting. After the budget is passed, assuming that there has been budget funding, then if you meet with staff and go through the normal process, they will be able to make a commitment. They won't be able to give you any funding until October 1st, but they can make we can make a commitment at that time. Yes, ma'am.
I'll interject. For the last 5 years, we've done a small fundraiser called Fun Fest for Foster Children, where we invite all the kids and they have an entertainment day over on a mini putt-putt golf course. We have craft tables and lunch for them, and they play golf and other activities.
You probably need to be to the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Somebody's keeping minutes.
Thank you.
You probably need to identify yourself for the record.
Kathy Wandell, I am the board president for Voices. Each year, you folks, for the last 4 years that we've had it, our smaller fundraiser called Fun Fest for Foster Children, we've had a verbal commitment with Chris to sponsor one of the holes on the mini putt-putt golf course. And we've always been fine with receiving the money after the fact. So we're aware of your budget schedule. And our heart kind of broke when we first figured out that our event was going to be before. But we've had dialogue with Chris and assured him we can work it out. As long as we had a verbal commitment, we would be fine with that.
Yeah, well, as soon as we have a budget, we can consider it. But you'll have to go through the normal process, and Chris does a vetting of it, and we do a vetting of it, and then, you know, I can't say we'd agree, but I do say one thing. I do agree that the work of Guardian Ad Litem, I've been well aware of it for years, and it's a wonderful job that you're doing.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's go on to the consent agenda. I need a motion to accept or...
I move we accept the consent agenda.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Dr. Gant. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Passes unanimously. There is no public hearing. Informational presentation. Old business. New business. Now we'll go to quarterly financial report.
And Joe will be delivering our quarterly financial update. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Good afternoon. Well, we had a very good quarter again. It is very warm in January, February, and March, and that's why I've circled every one of the columns on this chart. And we started going back and looking at the same time periods for prior years, and this is the fourth highest six-month period that we've had year-on-year increases in sales. 6%, 10, 10, 2, 8, and 8% actual versus budget. You can see it highlighted on the chart there. So year-to-date, we are 8% above our budget, which equates to $7.2 million of excess revenues. We were able to stay within the goal, except for the goal of being the in the bottom third of all utilities in the state of Florida, except for 1 month. And as I stated last quarter, I think that what happened is they had other utilities had savings that they were accumulating, and we returned the savings or adjust COPA on a monthly basis. Not all utilities do that, so they lowered their rates, caught us off guard, but we recovered quickly. So, and the goal is on average for the entire year, so we're well within that goal. So the numbers, metered sales revenue, $7 million, which is 7.5% positive variance. We were able to reduce the fuel cost to the customer by an additional $13.2 million. We did have to draw down rate stabilization funds to maintain our cash balances. I expect to be able to return some of that $7.2 million in excess drawdown back into the rate stabilization fund by the end of the year. On line 290, you see that we budgeted $55 million for fuel and purchase power, came in at $47 million. That is the $8 million that we were able to return to the customer. So operating revenue less fuel and purchase power is $9.3 million over our budget. All the departments in total stayed within their budget. You can see some positive and negative variances in the column three there, and that is a result of divisions and departments reorganizing, which we're going to talk about in the budget. But in total, we're well within our department budgets. Very close on line 610 and on line 760, so the change in net position, which is the net income for the six-month period, is we budgeted that we'd be at $7.3 million positive. We're actually at $18.5 million, so we're $11 million over where we thought we would be. But remember, a lot of that is that rate stabilization transfer that we did. So we won't be, I don't believe we're going to be this high at the end of the year. But I didn't go back and look at April, May, and June, but considering the temperature in this room, I think June's going to be a very hot month.
For sure.
I don't think y'all paid the utility bill. That's what it is.
We're practicing extreme conservation.
This is our investment portfolio. We're $112 million, and we've invested it all within the policy parameters of the investment policy. So the last two columns are zero variances. We continue to maintain most of our money in the SBA. It's convenient, it gives a good return, and we can get the money in a very short period of time. We were able to capture, if you look on the March 16th line in the third column, 0.98 is higher than the other months shown there. The market moved on us, and we were able to take advantage of it and get some capital gains out of some of the investments that we held. And if you look at the purple line, that's a result, shows the result of that. We're still very short. The average maturity life of the portfolio is less than half a year, and we are waiting on this yield curve to shift, not from left to right, but right to left, what happened here, the January red line, the expectation in the market was that the Feds were going to start increasing their rates. They did not. So the feeling on the street now is that with the jobs report and all the economic reports coming out there, it's the economy is slowing down again. So we don't feel that we're going to have any increases in the rates. That's all I have.
Any questions for Joe?
So there's in the interest market, there's just a little bit of out beyond 5, 6, 7 years? Is that what you're saying? Not much, is it?
No, there really isn't. And what happens if you get out into the 3 and the 5 year time frame, and then the yield curve does shift on you, and you want to get out of that 3 and 5 year investment, you've got to sell it at a loss.
Right.
And then you've got to reinvest, and then over time you can make it up. But we were in that condition probably 15 years ago, and we got extended, and we decided we're never.
So there's really no movement in that market this time.
No, there's about a 50 basis point move if you go out to the 5 year, but that's just not enough return
right.
to
no one, no
risk
one
it for a 5 year.
Out there, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to Wilbur Hill, who will give us a human resources overview. Wilbur? Are we in today?
We just finished our quarterly financial and getting ready to go into
item
the budget.
Item K.
Right up top of K. The quarterly was...
Oh, we're going into the budget first.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I really fouled you up, didn't I, Wilbur? Sorry about that. I saw that deer in the headlights look on your face.
He's after Joe the next time.
I just want to get it over with, huh? Jim, do you want to start?
Okay.
With this?
Yes. Just real quickly, you're going to see in the budget, or you have already seen, and it went out a lot of ups and downs, and mainly due to organizational changes. That were necessary because of changes in the environment that we're in. We have maintained the preliminary budget. We had recommended a 3% market level adjustment for planning purposes, and we continue in this budget to recommend that a 3% market level adjustment is being recommended. And we'll present that in a little bit. And then the entire budget is about $228 million, and it includes, among a lot of other things, some emerging projects that were asked to be brought back at this budget time from our preliminary budget strategic planning meeting a couple months ago. And those three areas were, one, the emergency staging area and employee appreciation pavilion, and... The board asked that at that time that it be expanded and be brought back to this meeting for discussion. That expansion went from 2,000 to 4,000 square feet, and the budget is now, recommended budget for that is $549,000. KUA's corporate video was asked to be brought back and pared down, and we have looked hard at that, and instead of $25,000 for that, we think that we can do a really good job for $17,000, and we have pared that down, that budget. However, the $25,000 is still in the budget packet you received in error, but that will be changed, okay, to the $17,000 if you approve it. And the active shooter detection system was asked to be brought back mainly for additional information, and we'd like to recommend that we don't bring any additional information about that system back to this public forum. But any board member that wants additional information will give you a complete rundown individually outside of a public meeting if that is your pleasure. And there is one item currently in the budget, in your budget packet, that we are recommending that be taken out, and that's $115,000 for a 13-foot-high wall for security reasons behind the truck bays in the original Lackey area that we were wanted to put up there for security reasons. And we've looked at some security enhancements in terms of cameras and alarms, and we feel that we can eliminate that from the budget, and it'd be a prudent and cost-effective thing to do. And so we would like to recommend that we take out that $115,000 from the budget. Another item, which is not budgeted and will not be budgeted, but I did want to mention it, is that when we moved from the original Lackey Center just recently, we have determined that there is a severe amount of work that needs to be done to make it usable at this point. We didn't realize how bad it was until we actually went over there and did a more closer inspection. And so it'll probably be a little bit, but we need to go on that as quickly as possible, and our intentions are to go with it in this budget year with contingency and or other non-used budget funds. And, of course, any large contract over $100,000 would be brought back to this board for your consideration. And the other emerging project that you didn't ask to be brought back, you just said go with it, and that was our solar education exhibit. Which you funded for $25,000. We will be bringing that back to you in our presentations for some additional options that you may or may not want to consider for some additional money. But it might be something that you want to do, and we just want to let you know about the opportunity for enhancing this.
Jim, let me ask a question.
Yes.
What is it that you found at the old Lackey Center that needs to be worked on?
Mold, flooding, deterioration of the building, a variety of things that we haven't even fully evaluated. But our facilities manager is right here and can give you a little bit more detail if you want.
No, I don't think so. I was more worried about any underground contamination because I know how expensive that is.
No, not that type. Not that type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just
next item.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, and at that, that's all I have in terms of an introduction. I'd like to, unless you have any questions of me directly, I'd like to have Joe give us a financial overview of the budget.
While he's getting up, I will ask you, when are we going to be speaking about these?
Right now. I mean, right as we go through the
emerging?
The emerging projects, yeah. We're there when it comes up in the individual departments. That's just giving you a heads up that it's coming.
Hey, I have quite a bit of information to share with you this afternoon. I think I can answer all of your questions with the information that we've included in the PowerPoint slide. But at any time, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to stop me. These are the things that I'd like to cover this afternoon. We have a vision and mission statement that we'll cover. We have a budget timeline, a budget development process. We think our budgeting process is pretty successful, so I want to kind of highlight that. I want to touch on, Jim already touched on the emerging projects, but I want to kind of go over briefly what the preliminary budget meeting results were. We have some items of note that are pretty interesting. And then, of course, the bulk of the information that we'd be interested in as far as approving a budget falls under the financial overview. So we have fiscal policy, we have payroll. We look at our budget from two different perspectives. We have money coming in and money going out. So we have revenues and sources, expenses, and other uses. Then I take the revenues and the expenses and put it together in what we used to call an income statement. Now we're calling it a statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position. And then I have some operating, designated, and restricted asset, cash, and investment accounts that I want to highlight, and then we continue to talk about the short horizon on our outstanding debt, so I want to touch on that, and then finish with electric rates. Our vision statement is to be the right utility, providing the right services at the right time. Mission statement is to provide reliable and economical services to our customers while partnering with the community and the environment.
Joe, I didn't bring my hearing augmentation with me today. Okay. Can you talk up just a little bit?
Yeah, I certainly will. we were talking yesterday, and we believe that we came up with this vision and mission statement about 20 years ago. So it's served us well. The budget timeline at the March meeting, the preliminary budget meeting, we introduced the emerging projects. Thank you. The capital requirements and the staffing requirements. Tonight we're reviewing the budget package that we sent to the board on June 3rd, so we're at the June 8th meeting. We're going to highlight any changes from the preliminary meeting, both in capital and staffing. And then the bulk of it is going to be the drilling down into the O&M budget that we are going to recommend that you all approve next month at the budget hearing. If for some reason that we don't get through the budget public hearing and get it approved, we've got another regular meeting that we can do that, and we can still meet the deadline per our charter to get the budget to the city of Kissimmee 45 days prior to the beginning of the fiscal year, which is August 17th. The beginning then starts October 1st. So the process, this really is a very long process that we go through. All organizations have some similar process. I don't know if it stretches out quite as long as we do, but because of the capital nature of our business, we really have to do it this way. We start out with a load forecast to determine what our load growth is going to be, and then we look at our rates and our reserve and whether we need to bond for any growth, and then capital and staffing to support the growth. In the January to March timeframe, we develop our programs, policies that we recommend to the board, and that includes these emerging projects. We develop staffing recommendations, capital, and then we go to the budget direction meeting for some guidance from you all. You gave us that guidance, and then we sent detailed guidance out to the departments on how to put the budget together. Each department develops the budget, and then we have a series of meetings with and without Jim Welsh to kind of go fine-tune, go through the budget. And then we develop revenue projections using our current rate structure, and then we pull everything together into financial statements. And then we have our budget workshop, and then we have our public hearing. Okay, we believe that our system works very well for us. We continue to, not only do we start out the new year with a new budget, but every month we're looking at our budget to actual, and the ambassadors in my department are working with their department VPs to continue to ensure that we have money to reinvest in the T&D system, that we stay within the budget. We have reserves that will support that reinvestment. We try to come back with the board not only for mandatory things that you have to approve, but items that will help inform you as to the job that we're doing and meeting all our objectives. Of course, we have fiscal policies that were put in decades ago and have served us well. We've added to them periodically. Jim referred to our organizational structure, and I did too during the quarterly, that we've made some changes, and that all of this budgeting process ensures or results in what we believe is extremely reliable service, competitive, stable rates. We've had very good reviews from our auditors and our rating agencies. So we think we've got the process down pretty well. The kudos to the ambassadors and the departments for working with us. This takes up a significant amount of their time. At the March meeting, we did cover the capital program, staffing requirements, and then here are the emerging projects. You gave us direction to proceed, and we did incorporate this in our fiscal year 2017.
Joe, can you wait for just a minute? What? It's extremely warm in here. Is somebody looking into
We're cranking it down as low as we can, as fast as we can. Is there a problem that you located or what?
It's being worked on. It's being worked on.
It's a chiller problem. It's being worked on.
It's really very warm in here. I'm sorry, Joe.
Judy, really why don't you see if you can get a couple fans? Okay. And
Just know that we are listening. We're just. But I'm having to fan myself because it is hot in here.
You're not imagining it. We're trying to make it work.
Thanks. Okay.
It's very warm outside. Well, yeah. Anyway, these are the emerging projects that you told us to go forward with, the solar education exhibit, which we've been talking about, the LED lighting, emergency staging area, and employee appreciation pavilion. And I'll have some information on that in a minute. The corporate video that Jim touched on, and then the active threat detection system that he also touched on. You did give us direction to hold, for now at least, the solar carport. So any changes in these items or any capital or staffing will be discussed when each VP comes up. I did want to highlight the emerging projects. Jim referred to the pavilion. We did come to you in March with a $165,000 number. We had some discussion with the board and felt it wasn't big enough. So we increased the size of that, but in addition to doing that, we also have an additional requirement to increase the retention pond. So we're estimating that it's going to cost an additional $384,000 and end up at $549,000, and that's our best guess. Jim touched on the reduction in the corporate video.
Is this the time to discuss that? Or
probably that's in the departments would be better.
Okay. I don't care.
Joe's just trying to highlight it real quick. Yeah.
Okay, in the letter that we included in the packet, we had a statement that one of the many strengths often noted by outside bond rating agencies is KUA's strong and stable management team. If you look around the room, we've been here for a long time. And we just, Ken Davis and Lisa Davis just left. And they were the first ones. Well, I guess Greg Woosner left last year. But the rating agencies recognize this, and it's been a plus for us. We did do some organizational changes due to the vacated positions and then the new hires that we brought in. Big thing, the TOHO transition. They did phase one last year. They did phase two recently, and apparently everything that we've heard, it's been very successful. So that will result in further redefining what we do here. We do have a two-month window where we're continuing to support that effort. So one of our favorite sayings is we like to right-size on the way up. So we're right-sizing on the way up, sideways, and going down with TOHO leaving. So this process, we believe, results in or has resulted, you're going to see large interdepartmental increases and decreases. If you look at the O&M analysis, you'll see never in the history that I've been here have we had such big variances. And it's a result of shifting divisions and people around within the departments or between the departments.
Excuse me, Joe. If this perchance gets to be too much, let us know.
Is it bothering Dr. Kant's hearing?
Well, it's going to affect the hearing, but I'll deal with it. Go ahead.
I heard the chill. It just kicked out.
Yeah, you can feel it. Yeah, I can feel it.
You can feel the difference.
Yeah. It's going to take a bit, but I can.
Thank you, Judy. I'm glad you did your magic. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
That's okay. So we're at 292 full-time equivalent positions, and that is 13 and a half positions less than what we had 10 years ago. So we continue to improve our efficiencies and doing more with less. We actually have a full-time person in my department that reviews processes, maps it. It's called process mapping. And what he does is he analyzes everything that everybody does within that process to try to identify non-value-added activities, and then we talk about it and we get rid of them. So that's one way of increasing the efficiency. We do a load forecast, and we've done this every year. We need that to gauge the growth of and expansion of our transmission and distribution system. We work with FMPA for their generation planning. That also helps us optimize our staffing levels. I'm going to show you the growth in electric sales and customers in a minute. The load forecast doesn't tell us in any one year you need to add a customer service rep or a line crew, but over a long period of time, obviously growth does have that effect. And here is the working with FMPA and their consultant, the econometric model was developed, and they obviously talked to us, and they sit up there and have economic information that they use, but they always check with the participants. So we agreed on a 1.9% customer growth and a 1.7% electric sales growth. If you look at this chart going from 11 to 2020, you can see in the dotted line, that's fiscal year 17, you can see that most of our customers are residential in nature. And the small commercial and large commercial is that small green part of the top of the chart. So 1.9% for customer growth. Energy sales is 1.7, and the residential customers provide about half of our retail sales. Small commercial is proportionally about the same as the number of customers, but the large commercial really, you can see the effect that they have on our retail sales, and then we've added lighting at the top. If you look over to the left, the 2011 and 12 fiscal years, we actually had reductions in energy sales that was left over from the 2008 recession. And the reduction in the fiscal year 2016 original budget is nothing more than not having enough information to be able to adequately forecast sales based on weather. It's all weather related. 2015 came in very good. 2016 is coming in very good. So the heat is good. The majority of the capital is, of course, improving system reliability. The capital budget in total is $26.9 million. We're being reimbursed by FMPA for $7.9. So the net capital that you're going to see in the schedules is $19 million. If you look at the five-year period, it's $141.5 million less $26.8 million. So the net capital, we're a capital-intensive industry. It's 114.7.
Down to that other table right here next to the
FMPA does a 10-year site plan or a load forecast, and their current projections is that they have enough capacity to last them to 2023. And we were on the phone the other day, and I asked them if that was still valid, and they indicated that it's probably 2024. It's important to us because in 2021 will be the first year that we will not have debt requirement payments, like I've said in the past, about between $20 and $25 million. So for a three-year period anyway, we're going to be able to do things that as soon as they build something, then they're going to pass those costs on to us. So we've got a little window of opportunity there. And we've asked the departments to start looking at the 2021 time period now instead of waiting to try to develop things that we think that we can do to improve reliability even more. Okay, the preliminary meeting, any changes that we talk about in the department, as I've said, will be discussed by the VPs. Here's the capital, the $19 million, and obviously engineering and operations has the bulk of that. We've grouped all the other departments together. You see a fairly significant increase in 18 and 19, and then a drop-off in 2020. That is the AMI effect, building out $24 million of AMI system. Okay, items of interest. Big thing. This plan assumes no base rate increases for the projected planning period. We haven't had a base rate increase since 2005, so we're 11 years into setting our rates properly back then, and no projections through 2020. We do utilize our COPA mechanism, as I just discussed, in the prior agenda item. We also use rate stabilization funds to smooth the customers' bills. Long-term bonded debt done by a bond issue will be done in 2018. We do have an error in the report. We missed taking out in a portion of the model, we missed taking out principal payments. We were trying to get the document squared away by this meeting, and we just weren't comfortable. So we will come back at the July meeting with the proper number.
And those, the order of magnitude of those numbers, Joe?
Well, we had in 16, 17, and 18, it was $6.7 million of payments that we were going to make, but we refunded it. We called the bonds. So that's the magnitude of the money that would have gone to pay the principal. Now is going to go in one of those cash buckets. So that's a use of funds. So the total budget's not going to change a lot, but where that money went is. So, and I'll show that to you at the July meeting. We are going to pay the commercial paper off by 2020, and then we obviously follow the fiscal policy parameters, so we're in compliance with that. And as I stated earlier, the emerging projects have been budgeted for. I'm not going to go through each one of these. They're in the packet. I haven't.
Joe, would you back up just a minute?
Yeah.
You said capital program reflects board's direction on emerging projects.
Yes.
I think we've only given direction on one of them, have we not?
We need to go back to that summary slide.
Yeah.
Back up a little bit.
Can you hit escape? I can find it quicker that way.
Well, it's just...
Well, we had those five that we were given direction to...
To bring back to us. I don't
to bring,
think
to bring, yeah,
said to,
bring,
to move forward with it.
Well, when I say move forward in the planning and budgeting for it. If you all have made make a decision tonight to take them out, we can take them out or change them. Or we can do anything up until the... budget, the public hearing.
Okay, that's what kind of threw me, because I know there's only one that we've made a decision on.
Yeah, what I mean is that we've just incorporated it in the budget so that we have the funds if we move forward.
Okay.
If decision's made to stop and not do it, it's a quick fix if we make the decision tonight.
Can I make a request?
Yes, you may.
Jim, if you pass your microphone to the speakers, it'll make a world of difference for Dr. Gamp, and then the speaker can just pass it to the next person.
Yeah.
Yours is so much louder.
You're not getting picked up right, so just go ahead and use this lapel mic. Test it out first. You talk into it.
Testing.
Is that better?
Coming through okay?
Okay. Good idea.
I guess everybody will have to.
Yeah, you can just pass it on.
Okay, can you hear me okay? All right, very good.
Testing. See, that's what we need to do is use this, maybe if you feel more comfortable.
Right, doesn't matter.
Just make sure you're talking right into it.
Okay. Okay, as I stated, we're not going to make any changes to the fiscal policy. They've served us well. The only clarification we made on that last one, when we talk about the AMI project and taking 25% of the money each year to fund it, we didn't designate what fund that would go into, and what we've just added is in the third line there, the last bullet, in the capital improvement fund, just so everybody knows where the money is. Operating revenues and other sources, obviously metered sales is the bulk of it, and then we have those other classifications shown there on the slide. Getting into the operating revenue numbers, we have $219 million of metered sales revenue, a credit or a give back to the customer of $31 million due to lower fuel costs than what's included in our base rates. So we have total operating revenues of almost $207 million. Other operating revenues are the pieces that are shown here. One thing you don't see here is the amount of funds that we were getting from billing for Toho. That's gone away. We do still bill for the city of Kissimmee for stormwater and sewer. So,
I have a question.
Yes.
The $31 million, how is that given back to our customers?
In a reduction to the, if you look at the bill, you'll see a top line that'll show your usage and your total, and then you'll see a COPA line that will actually reduce the bill down to a net amount.
So they will see
yes.
that we are giving them back money.
Correct.
I think it would be very important as a...
They already do.
We see it.
It's in the budget.
Yeah, yeah, we already do. I've got a bill, the very last slide, I believe. I've got a bill.
Okay, here we go.
Sure.
I don't pay it, so that's one.
Now I know what Bruce is being kept around for.
Are thankful.
I just want to make sure that our customers know that we're giving them back money, because that's important for them to know.
And it's a big jump.
Yes, it is.
$1 million, it certainly is. Thank you.
On line 10, we have gross income, and then we have other sources of funds. Depreciation and amortization, the question would be, why is this a source of funds? And it's because it's an expense that doesn't result in a cash outlay. So I have to add it back here. And investment in lease is, we don't record this as a revenue, but it is, when we got into the all requirements project and finalized the 2008 TARP agreement, this is part of the money that they give back to us for our Kane Island site. So the total revenues and other sources, which is the total budget that you would approve if everything was 100% correct, would be $228,178,000. But we'll have a new number for you next month. Here's just a chart of the numbers that I went through. If you look at the red part of the graph in 2019 to 2020, that is the build-out and finalization of the AMI project. We're taking those revenues from the rate stabilization draw. So that's why that seems to go down. Operating expenditures and other uses, 54% of our total expenditures is fuel-related, 16% is department O&M expenses, and then we have those other categories listed there. The top piece there, debt service costs, will go away in 2020. There's your fuel and purchase power of $123.5 million, all your departmental O&M expenses of $35 million. Here is a graph of the projected ARP expenses. A lot of colors up there, but basically the net ARP charge is the red portion of the graph. That's after the credits that they give us. And we're not assuming any additional drawdown or buildup of the rate stabilization fund that sits up at FMPA, because it's just it would just be a guess as to what dollar amount that would be, because it's all dependent on the price of fuel. So we're in the $80 range for dollars per megawatt. We don't expect. We hope we hope fracking can continue, so the natural gas prices will remain where they are today. 292 full-time equivalent positions, no change from the current budget, reflects a decrease of what we showed you at the preliminary meeting of 293.5. As Jim said, we have incorporated the 3% market level adjustment in the budget per year direction. Total payroll is $35 million, 24 of that is salaries, $11 million is benefits. Here is a departmental breakdown, and obviously engineering and operations. Customer service are the two largest departments, and power supply. And then here are the fringe benefits, and they're made up of all of those on the right-hand side of the chart there. And they're all... been there for quite some time. Other operating expenses, line 19, gives us total operating expense of $184 million. Just like we have other sources on the other side of the equation, we have other uses that are not expenses, but they're listed here to come up with a total budget, and that's the revenue bonds payable and of course, the capital projects. So again, we have the $228,178. Here's just a chart again showing the four-year period. And again, this drops down because this is the other side of the budget. This drops down because capital projects drop down. The blue portion of that last chart shrinks back because, again, the AMI project is completed, at least we think planning on it in 2019. So now I take revenues and expenses and pull them together into that income statement that I was talking about earlier. So we have total operating revenue, we have less fuel and purchase power, departmental O&M, other operating expenses, interest revenue, to get to a bottom line of $21.4 million that we have budgeted, projected that we'll have at the end of 2017. Okay, operating designated asset cash and investment accounts. We have a 45-day requirement. That's a fiscal policy. That's the $6.5 million. We have Good Neighbor Fund. We have the Reserve for Future Capital Outlay set up many years ago. We haven't touched that. It grows by the percentage increase in megawatt hour sales. Self-insurance fund, we haven't adjusted that over the years either. And then the last bucket that a leftover dollar will go into is that general reserve fund. Restricted funds, principal and interest reserve, you see that drops off in 2018. Advances for construction stays there. Current principal and interest, if I showed 2020, 2021, that would be zero. The renewal and replacement fund of $1.5 million, that's a bond covenant, that's going to drop off. Customer deposits will remain relatively stable. Rate stabilization funds drop over the period shown there, and again, that's a result of trying to keep cash balances where they need to be, but also the AMI, the $24 million in AMI project. That's where that money comes from. And then we have a small amount, a $3.7 million amount at the All Requirements Project for working fund needs. As cash shrinks over the five-year period, it's not a huge decrease. 100 days of cash on hand means that you would have to go 100 days without collecting any money at all and still be able to pay all your expenses, which is very healthy. Here's City of Kissimmee transfer and taxes, a total of almost $23 million. The transfer methodology is $16.3 million based on megawatt hour sales. The city gets 25% of the county's tax, and then the city has a tax. So total of that is that we transfer, bill for and transfer to them is the $23 million. As I said earlier, the 2015 year was very good. It looks like it's a drop, and we budgeted that it would be, but we're having such a good year that the city can enjoy more transfers. And then we project about $22.8 million in 2017. Here's the county taxes that we bill for and just turn over to them per their ordinance. Here's a summary of the outstanding debt. We only have two issues left, the 2003 and 2011, and then the subordinate debt, which is our commercial paper of 43.2. Take the 43.2, chop it in half, and that's the 2019 and 2020 principal payments that we're gonna make. It's not going to be that easy. You've got to do it at the time you renew the letter of liquidity, but we'll get that taken care of by 2020. This chart is incorrect. It shows the series that we included this in the packet that you went. The 2005 series has been refunded, has been called and paid off. So that's the error that we had in there. Same thing with this. You see the green. That's gone. And we'll correct that. Debt service coverage is very high. And in 2018, it will be non-existent because our bonded debt that requires a debt service coverage will be paid off. This is a financial parameter that will go to zero in 2020. The variable rate exposure is our commercial paper that will go to zero in 2020. This is where we are in March for our residential rates for 1,000 kWh. We're in slot number 32. We want to be no higher than 27. That's our lower third goal, and we're well within that. This is my favorite chart. If you ever have any questions about what our rates are composed of, this is where you go to find it. I won't go over it, but it's got all the details of how we structure our rates and where the money goes to. And if you look at the gray versus the green is much lower than it was last year because you all gave us the goal to get down there. We have, and the solid orange line is the actual percentage that we're at. ranking, and then the dotted orange is where we expect to be by the time we get to the end of the year. And that is all I have.
Very good. Understood.
I know we've talked about this before, but on your commercial paper, what's the total amount of it?
$43.2 million.
We're only getting almost nothing on our investments. Would it be prudent to possibly buy that down a little sooner using the reserve? You're probably paying three and a half on commercial paper or something.
Actually, it is just above what we're actually making in investments. So it's not going to the reason we did the 2005 series is those percentages were in the 5%. Commercial paper is only costing us like less than 0.5%. So they're really, it's so short term in nature that the risk is all on us. That's why they don't demand a higher rate, because it's less than 270 days.
100% cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no wash there either. So
no, it's really wouldn't help us much.
Any other questions? Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Now we'll hear from Wilbur.
Thank you.
I'm going to skip out in a minute. Everybody knows I don't ever vote on any of this. Well, I don't vote on anything really. But
now you've heard what we're going to give the city. You can leave.
I could have found that out with a phone call yesterday. But anyway, just want to let you know when I went out the door, I wasn't mad at anybody.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Wilbur?
Thank you, ma'am. We had no corporate organizational structure changes since the budget directional meeting. As I shared with you at the directional meeting, all the boxes here at the bottom of the screen are the major departments that report into the general manager, and it contains the current manpower along with their forecast for any changes in manpower in the foreseeable future. Now, as you can note, for 17 budget, the IT department will be recommending an increase of one position, and the customer service department is recommending a decrease of one position. Of course, should you approve staff's recommendation to increase by one and decrease by one, the net value is going to bring us to zero, and obviously our manpower will remain the same, as Joe had indicated a little earlier, 292. At the budget directional meeting, I also shared with you that we have gone out and surveyed organizations, and I would bring back to you at this meeting all those organizations that we survey and get salary information from. And we ask them what do they anticipate in giving out in salary adjustments for this coming year. As you can see, many of them are still yet undetermined, but for those of the ones who did, in fact, respond, you can see now that many of them are giving an average total of about 3%. It's hovering in around 3%. So,
Wilbur?
Yes, sir.
Just to kind of update you a little bit and the board, we haven't voted on it yet, but I think city employees are going to be at 4. We were way behind due to the economy several years ago, so we're probably going to do 3 and then one more to help us get caught up with the marketplace.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I said we hadn't voted yet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'll take that. We understand. We kind of got that feedback from you all, but they hadn't confirmed anything, so we couldn't put it in here. Although Toho did, in fact, confirm their information with us. And of course, you have previously in past years authorized us a 3% market level adjustment, and that's actually worked very well for us at keeping our salaries competitive with the labor market. And so that brings us to staff's recommendation that the board approve a market level adjustment of 3% for fiscal year 2017 annual budget.
So now you need for us to have a motion that we approve a market level adjustment.
3%. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm working on it. I move that we approve the market level adjustment of 3% for the fiscal year 2017 annual budget.
Do we have a second?
I agree.
We have a second? Yeah, I know. I said we have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes.
Thank you from Thank all you. Of the employees.
Thank them. Yes.
With us separating our services with TOHO, I think I can understand we're probably not going to have to be able to give up any employees because we're doing the same service ourselves. Is that basically correct?
No.
We're going to be able to
yes.
give up some employees?
Yes, and already have.
That's
attrition
been an ongoing
through. Through attrition.
For
and
attrition.
Year, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
In anticipation
if not
2 years.
Of this. And I think we've been planning
so
for that.
So you didn't include it, you didn't speak to it in this budget?
No, sir. It's just ongoing because, as Mr. Welch said, we've been addressing it through attrition.
But it fixed to happen. That's what I'm trying to say,
though. And we've been trying to ready ourselves to address that. We recognize that we would be in that situation. So with vacancies, we've been trying to address not filling vacancies to try to.
Retraining.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that's, we've retrained some of the people.
Redeployed where there's
where we could.
To do that.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think it's very good. I just think it's something we just need to recognize. That's all. I think it's a good plan, and I figured it was going to keep status quo, but
yes, sir. We've been very sensitive with it, and Susan has done an excellent job at trying to be proactive in making sure that we do placements.
We've been upfront with all the employees throughout the process.
True.
What was likely to happen in what areas? Other areas where there's that same effect is with the automation of the meters, meter reading.
And, right.
That
okay.
That'll result in reduction.
Are there any more questions?
That's it.
Open for questions. Any more questions? Thank
okay.
you. Thank you very much. Power supply. Larry Matter. Larry Matter.
He's the Larry that matters.
that would be me. Good evening, everyone. I'm usually pretty loud. Can you hear me? I'm pretty loud to begin with. I usually don't even need a mic. The power supply budget. Start out with our organizational chart. There's no change in the amount of employees. Thing to make note of, we did make a change of two titles, inventory coordinator and supervising utility worker. And it's the same employees. It just suits their what their duties are more closely. It was a slight increase. The other thing to notice is that the blue is what we pay here, and everything, all the other employees down below that are in green are paid for entirely by FMPA, plus a 30% A&G adder, which is forecasted to be $1.8 million in the coming year. And then our expenses, again, most of them are paid by FMPA on the lines, but if you notice the one big line of the $123 million, that's in a sense our electric bill and the power supply department. Not only do we run the machines to try to keep good, efficient power that goes to our power supplier, we also manage that organization, FMPA, and also through the power pool. And that's the bill we see. So if you go down to the bottom, what's left is my department up here, which is my administrative assistant and myself, some pay that we pay towards our utility workers when they do the substations. That's not all paid for at K&I. When they do work for KUA only, then we pay them. That's what's left. So that makes up the $124 million for the most part. Well, the most part's made up of your electric bill. The little bit left pays the rest. Just to bring to your attention that
most of that salary for you?
Yeah, with the 124.
$124 million?
If you would give it to me this year, you probably won't see me next year. but I'm open for any of anything like that.
That's a little bit more than 3%, right? A little bit more than 3%, right?
Every year we show you if there is any change in the capital budget. In this case, the capital was paid for by FMPA, but to bring you aware that there's the pipeline I'd made told you earlier in our earlier presentation that FMPA's big expenses to bring the new pipeline that's coming down towards and past Kane Island. They wanted to connect it the rest of the way in, and that's where we negotiated and got the, well, in our case, the free tap, where they wanted to have the ability to run it right up to the power plant and use it. So initially, they figured it $800,000 less than this. We got Black & Veatch to come in, and they said, here's the real cost. So they added the additional $800,000. Other than that, that's what we have at Power Supply. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions from the board? No? Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we have Mr. Jeff Gray.
For IT, Information Technology.
All righty. Can you hear me okay? No changes since the last time we looked at our chart. As you know, we are projecting to add a body for AMI impact in the next year. We won't be putting that person in on 1 October. It's only when the project demands that we have a dedicated programmer assigned to it. But we needed to put it in, of course, at this time, and we thank you for that. In terms of our O&M, it's a capital-intensive year for us because as these servers, as you know, we buy servers 1 year and 3 years later, we're replacing them. And some years we buy more than others, and that ages them out appropriately. And as a result of that, we have some that come due at the same time. So this is one of those years where we've got a lot of servers coming due. It's just you'll see a spike, and it'll go right back down, and you'll see that in another chart. But that's where a lot of the dollars are being spent in our next year. Other than that, everything's right on track. In terms of the solar education project, you had given us permission to go ahead and start with a $25,000 idea of something we could use to educate the community on solar power. The when we started looking at what's possible, what some others have done and things like that, we realized that we probably should give you maybe a choice or a sort of a la carte way of looking at it, not just say for $25,000 that's all that can be done and so forth. Of course, the dollars that affect doing more kick in when you start adding different features. What we wanted to advise you of so that you wouldn't come back to us later and say, why didn't you tell me we could get that, you know, that big thing over there from somebody else. So we kind of package them as an option one, two, and three. Option one is what you've already given us to go ahead to look at, which is a $25,000 option. For that amount of money, we can have a portable solar unit that one of our employees can actually take to, say, a school, set up and have all the kids see how solar power works, you know, hands-on, and even some kits that the kids could work with and learn, like, to make a motor or something like this with solar power. Very engaging, very proactive, great for KUA in terms of our community outreach. And, of course, some customer education. And when you get into solar, I think it's important that we kind of remind ourselves that it's not just solar power, it's also conservation, because as soon as you start living off of solar power, you become very concerned with how much wattage you're using on your appliances, because it's going to run out now. You know, there's no endless pipe as you have with electric from the utility. So we want to engage that as well, like make an awareness of conservation, which is good for everybody, not just those who are using solar power. So with all that, we know we can do the things that you see there on the first panel, which is option one. With option two, we could make it a little more aggressive and have a tow-behind vehicle, something like a small camper type of thing that you would pull behind a truck that we could set up. It would have a solar panels on that, a little bigger, a little more to walk up to, say, at a downtown event. And this could be the type of thing that we could use in disasters where we would allow people from the community to come and charge their mobile devices and things like that because power is out in that area. Again, another great opportunity to be present in the community during tough times. But that's a smaller version. We can do a lot with it. Again, we can have pamphlets and things like that. Yes?
In case of an emergency, where do we get the power to charge people's devices?
Well, it would be a solar unit, so we literally just set it up, right? It would be a self-standing.
Solar would be the power source.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's more, I would imagine, if you imagine, say, a parking lot somewhere where we would say to the community, come on down, KUA's got their solar charging unit here. You can get your, you know, keep in touch with family back home and so forth by charging your phones.
I think it's a great idea. I just wondered in case of there's no sun and Right. Are we going to have the power to
Well, and to do oddly it? Enough, we would probably have to build it into some of our DDD preparations, which would be go charge that thing up, make sure it's fully charged before the storm. But usually after storms, actually, we do pretty good with sun because they kind of take all the clouds with them. So we'd probably be okay. But it would just be something we would plan for and try to make it great for the community. So that's option two, a little smaller scale. Option three is something that we've seen, which, of course, when you're imagining, you know, educating the community and things like that, is more of a trailer, larger scale, obviously like a tow behind or even a motorized coach that has like a almost like a museum inside, you know, where it has the actual solar power on the roof or outside where you can see it. And on the inside, there are appliances, actual demonstrable technologies of solar, how you would manage it, how it works, you know, appliances that work and so forth on the inside. Could also work in light of the community stuff where they could come in and charge devices as well. But again, that's more equipment, more expense. That's the way this works. But we didn't want to just, like I said, throw you just option one and not let you know that there was more capable. And believe it or not, a lot of this is actually available locally. There are companies out as close as Coco that make things like this. We kind of were surprised to find out how close they were. So there's a lot of expertise about solar power right here in Central Florida that we can kind of promote and partner with. So with that, I just give you the three options and give you a chance to discuss. Tell us what you'd like us to do.
Is that it? So do we have discussions?
How is option one portable? Is it like a...
It's like briefcase size, a little bigger than a briefcase, I guess. But it's briefcase size so that an employee could actually carry it into a school classroom, as an example, or a community center, set it up and then show how it works and so forth. But it's small. It's not big scale.
As opposed to two, which is a permanent fixture on a trailer.
Right.
That would
with panels and exactly. Kind of all bolted on.
Director Urbina, did you have a question?
I kind of like the option three because of the appliances. I never thought about how appliances would run on a solar system. So maybe customers would be interested in that, I think.
And to add to that, that's probably the closest way we can hit the conservation angle because, again, whether you're on solar or not, you're still sensitive to the idea of using less power in your home. So there's a conservation benefit to going and seeing these appliances. Well, if they run on solar, they can definitely run on regular electric, and maybe I would benefit from upgrading my refrigerator or what have you. And that's where we saw a lot of potential with something that size. It is bigger, you know, but...
Director Gant, do you have a question?
Well, yeah. I think this could be a progressive thing. I think that I have some concern about doing anything in solar because I have questions about it. But if we decided to start with the first one and then let it go into next year and how it's doing, and if it's something that's progressing, I don't think it's going to impact FMPA's need to continue to develop power. And, you know... now with batteries, they're developing. I understand you can use this a little bit better at night than you could have in the past. So we've got to produce the same amount of electricity to provide them power after the sun goes down. So, if with these options, I'd say we start out low, and then if it's a viable thing and needs to, then progress with the need and with the idea.
Is unit one that can grow into unit three, or do we throw away unit one to go into unit three?
The collateral material, the educational material, videos maybe in the lobby, things like that we would do at any of these levels, that stuff would stay no matter which option you choose. It's obviously the portable one is only going to be good for that level, and then the bigger one, if we went to a one and a three, which is kind of the discussion here, then you're not going to be able to bolt number one onto number three. No, it would be two separate items. Yeah.
I would think a lot of the difference in option two and an option three is the motorized coach,
the size,
or the large trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I can see putting a whole lot of money into that, but I can see having the tow behind thing so we can pull up at a school and we've got it all ready to go. And I like the idea of having it so that we can recharge things. And I would think we could do some with appliances. If you've got a plug that you can plug your iPhone into, you could plug an electric skillet into it and demonstrate some stuff too.
I tend to like option two also.
Okay.
You could also use the portable solo system, that briefcase, to go to other schools. I mean, then you have two options. You mm-hmm. have the small, maybe take that to a grade school, and then the other.
Right. And we saw one as sort of like it's a given, and you would just, do you want to have like a small one for the school and then a bigger one that you take and tow behind?
I just can't say spending $50,000 on a coach. That's where I have to back off. Yeah.
And again, some have done it, some haven't. And it doesn't have to be a motorized coach. It could be like a fifth wheel type thing, but then we still have to have some vehicle to get it on location, right?
Yeah, so. Yes.
You might put solar panels on our barbecue grill.
Like a solar cooker.
You could put them on there, and then you have lighting system built into it. It's a demonstration.
Okay. All right, do we have a motion?
I'd like to move that we do option two so that we've kind of got maximum flexibility of what our demonstration can be.
Mm-hmm. Do I have a second?
I agree.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. And moving right along to the threat detection system, as Jim said, in terms of actual demonstrations of the technology, we'd prefer to do that on a one-on-one basis for security reasons. But what we do have now is up there in front of you in terms of what we can do today. And if we did nothing else, if we added nothing else, it's still a really good system. We did test it recently with SWAT and KPD here for a four-hour exercise that was very intense with hostage negotiations and evacuating people who were sheltering in place. It went very well. They were very impressed with our level of tech in terms of being able to remotely control doors and see video and so forth and manipulate people through the buildings and all that. What we don't have, the missing piece, if you will, is the immediate intel to tell people who need to get out of the building where to avoid, where the gunman might be. And that's really where this system would come in terms of the active shooter detection. We can get this building emptied in less than 2 minutes, and we can text every phone and you know, put it on every screen. We're already there. It's the ability to say where the gunman is, because we may not know when someone hits a panic button. We might be in a reaction mode. And that's where this is that missing piece. If you send people down a stairwell and the gunman's at the bottom, obviously that's not a good situation. So you want to have as much information before you tell everybody to get out. So that's where it plays in. And again, we're happy to do one-on-one tours at any time. I need 5 minutes warning and we can do it.
It's interesting.
And Ms. Thacker came and saw one today.
What is the cost? I see $75,000.
Yeah, and I apologize for the confusion. We saw it as a $75,000 initial investment because we'd be building out, you know, from the start, and then $25,000, you know, estimated the second year because we'd probably be adding some features once we saw how it worked.
And that's just for the Missing Link.
That's correct.
Because you already have the other.
I have everything that you see there in the top, that first set of bullets. We already have all that in place, and some is being finished out right now with the screens that would pop up and tell you that there's something going on and you need to evacuate.
So 75 would be budgeted next year and 25 after that?
That's correct. So it's a total of 100.
Are there any other questions?
I got a question.
Yes.
With our lockdown system that we have within the building, how do you visualize, does this lessen the need for this type of thing?
No, what it gives us is immediate accuracy of where the gunman is. First of all, if there's no gunshot, then it wouldn't even trigger. It's only when a gunshot is fired it would trigger, and then we would know within seconds that a gunshot's detected this location, and now we can start our lockdown procedures and so forth.
Lockdown. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, we can lock down now with as much as a phone call.
We're locked down now. You have these doors are all.
Oh no, they're still. This isn't the level of lockdown that we use when we have an emergency. And I can show you this on a tour if you'd like. It becomes much more granular in terms of how many doors are working.
But I'm saying a normal person didn't, unless he knows how and has a key, mm-hmm. he probably can't move through this building very well.
That's correct. But if they took a key from someone else, we still have to address that issue. If they took someone else's key and said, well, I'll just take yours and get into this door with lockdowns, that doesn't work.
This is the kind of issue that once it comes up, you're kind of stuck with the idea. You really don't know where you should go and why you shouldn't go there,
mm-hmm.
because one life is worth a lot more than we can even talk about here. And so, you know, I've tried to struggle with this and put a percentage wise, but it don't work in this situation. And the other thing that's happening, and we've talked about it, is moving commercial downstairs out of this building, possibly sometime in the future. Would that make a difference if we didn't have customer service downstairs? How would that impact your thing?
Our risk of an active shooter is no greater or less with customers in the building, because it can happen at any place at any time. The FBI studied it for, I think, since 2000, and they went through every – they tried to find a pattern that would indicate this could happen, and whether it was a military installation, hospitals, you know, businesses, it's just – there's no one thing that says this is why it happens and so forth.
In those discussions where it's come up, I don't think I've heard one say about access to the building was a problem. You know, in the schools, they were blocking the doors and all that sort of thing, but they didn't have automatic locked doors.
It's from what we've seen, it's the ability to react quickly and make sure as many people as possible know that there is a shooter in the building, because many times people are staying in a building with a shooter unaware that it's going on, walking into the line of sight and being so shot.
This in the 2-year cycle here at 100,000, is there a number that you can put to this as the ongoing cost?
Not yet. I imagine it will be sort of once set up. There might be a minor amount of service cost to maintain it, but I don't think it'll be very expensive.
I do have a question. So the missing link is location of the shooter, and the reason we know the location is because they've shot somebody.
That's correct. They have to pull a trigger. If you just pull out a gun and there's a threat, then a panic alarm will take care of that. And we have those.
Well, that's my problem here.
Mm-hmm. You just don't
for $100,000, you don't want to be the first one they meet. But other than that, they're still in the building.
That's correct.
And when the shot's fired, you're going to have automatic lockdown anyway, no matter what. So can we just say stay in place?
We don't recommend staying in place because of the things that I'll show you, actually, when you get a chance, come take a tour.
Yeah, I will.
Because we had some who stayed during our drill, and there's a big risk to staying in a building with a shooter, big risk.
That's what you hear they have people do, is stay in place.
Yeah, it's bad advice. Run. Get out of that building.
Push cabinets in the door and everything else to save themselves. But can we put this off until we have those one-on-ones? Yeah. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
I think, would you all feel safe better if you'd...
Well, it's part of the budget. You can tell them not to spend it, but if you're building our budget now, you kind of have to move
forward.
We can
always add things to the budget, can't we?
Well, in July, you'll approve the budget, and we can either take it in or leave it out, assuming you have your one-on-ones done by that time.
I think if Leticia, if you could work with us to get some scheduled, I would appreciate it. And I would like to go further into it, because I'd like Dr. Gantz said, I certainly don't want to be the one that vote against it and have somebody die. So I'd like to have some information.
So
are we in consensus? If you bring that back to us, we'll bring it back in July.
Well, we'll have we'll set up the budget with the dollars in there, but at that point we'll bring up and say, do you still want them left in there? And if not, you can pass the budget with that excluded.
Okay.
Is that a good strategy?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Board.
Good evening, Directors.
For the record, this is Brian Horton, Engineering and Operations.
Yes, ma'am. There's been one change to the organizational structure since you last saw it at the March budget discussion, and that was the Assistant Vice President of Engineering and Operations. Used to oversee the substation maintenance group. We've reclassified that position down to fill a need in our dispatch and compliance business unit. It's a SCADA and communications technician position. That count went from 2 to 3, but we took a higher level position and then moved it to fill a need. The O&M overview, is roughly about a little over $20 million for E&O this year. About $7 million of that is capitalized O&M. If you look at this chart, you'll see some variance in some of the line items that's due to the reorganizations that you heard Joe and Wilbur talk about. Some of the more notable ones is you see a 66% increase in the professional and contractual services line item. That's a result of bringing over the funds for our centralized transmission operations that were in the SEO division. We brought that over to E&O. And then also there's and the capital, there's about $4 million for AMI that was that project was housed in SEO, and we brought that over to E&O. Changes in the capital budget since you saw it last, we identified a need to upgrade one of our transmission facilities out of Kane Island. So we plugged in about $750,000 for that in FY17. And also we trued up the line extension, internal and external line extensions, for about a total of about $1 million. And that's it for E&O.
Any questions, O'Brien? Dr. Kant?
Is the new match we're moving over reliability and SCADA, is it working out in your department okay?
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, it's okay.
Yeah, in fact, most utilities are structured the way that we have reorganized, where those components are in an energy delivery department.
Until about 8 years ago, that's the way we were structured.
But it's got to be a big job now that the requirements have come along.
Brian's background leaves him particularly suited to have it in his department, because he was in charge of all compliance up at Tallahassee for a number of years.
And Brian knew, so all the time this was developing, all those regulations that were developing that impacted that, creating new expense on the front end, and we realized it was less than 1%, but it is new money that goes to the ratepayer.
Yeah.
And in the future, if you see that is starting to have a greater impact on the ratepayer structure, I think the board should know it up front, because they need to lobby. I mean, they need to, you know, that's the government just adding additional expense to the customer. We can't do anything about it.
Sure. We would bring that back to you in a departmental semiannual report.
Thank you, Brian. Okay. Customer service, Susan Postens.
Hey, Susan.
Hello. Can you hear me, Dr. Gant? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. No changes to the org charts for customer service. I wanted to provide a list of some of the things that impact what's going on in customer service, and give you a little bit of an update. We do have some environmental impacts to what we do in customer service. Our write-offs still remain very low. Our service levels remain very high. We've had a slight reduction in calls and customer visits. We expect that to go down a little more, or at least the duration of the calls may shorten, because we'll no longer be responding to the water inquiries. We are still working on increasing the use of self-service through e-bill, and then more conservation education, including the solar, and the transition has been completed. So here's our O&M overview. So a very slight increase of 2%. You can see that even with the market value increases and stuff, our payroll remains about the same because of the reduction that we've had, or reclassification of positions throughout the years. And the largest increase was in the fringe benefits, with kind of matched with a decrease in materials and supplies, less trucks, less petroleum, and that type of thing. Every year I tell you, or I show you, how some of the revenues that we get from non-rate revenues offset the cost of providing customer service. So these are the fees that we charge for different customer service activities. Questions?
I have a question. How is this, the Labor Department's edict about level $47,000, what is it, the wage increase, minimum wage, has that affected us? Do you know?
Where's Wilbur?
Yes, I'm sorry, that's a Wilbur thing.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But you know what I'm talking about. They have said that.
Yeah, we have very few people in that classification.
In that classification.
Wilbur, how many was it?
Well, it's two now.
I should have asked. I'm sorry.
Yes, we had one that we were tracking, but now we have two, and we're just studying that. We are looking at the adjustment that you just approved. We'll probably reconcile that, too.
Okay, very good.
You know, so, but we may have one left in there. I can't be exact. I'm not looking at the numbers, but I think we'll be fine. We are monitoring that very closely.
There were a lot of people that were very heavily impacted by that.
Yes.
So I just wondered if we were, but I guess not. Good job, then.
We're on top of it.
Thank you.
Could you all go out of presentation mode? There was, I promise you, there was a slide in here. And it's a hidden slide, so I didn't get it. But
there's our bill.
If you look at the KUA logo and move over to the right, you can see the electric charge and then the fuel adjustment.
Right.
As a credit. So that's where it shows up on the bill.
Okay.
And in the future going forward, you won't see the TOHO section of the bill anymore because they're gone. And also earlier I said we bill for the city's services, and I said stormwater and sewer. It's trash, not sewer. So just make sure I correct that. Could you go out of mode so that I can go back to... Thank you. Oh, now I'm in the wrong presentation. So if you go back to... thank you. Okay, this is my organizational chart, and there's two new divisions. We talked about the organizational changes. Bottom left is materials management, and top right or middle right is the fleet operations. Those two divisions have been moved over into my department, and that's going to result in these variances that I referred to earlier that are larger than you've ever seen. So that's really driving all of these plus normal increases in operations. There is a change from what I presented at the budget direction meeting. I did not have fuel tank replacements. We had a leak in one of the gasoline tanks. We have two gasoline tanks and one diesel tank. One of the gasoline tanks developed a leak. And instead of replacing it, which is very expensive, we foam filled it to get us under DEP regulations. And I felt it necessary to at least put something in the budget. And I put it out in 2020 for replacement of all three. We may want to recommend, and we'll come back to the board to move that up. We are going to be repaving the Lackey Service Center area, not the new portion, obviously, but the old portion. If we do that and I come back later on and replace those tanks, we're going to have to tear up that part of the pavement. So I don't know if it'd be worthwhile to move forward on it or not, but I just wanted you to be aware that we put $328,000 out in 2020.
Joe, you think you're going to find some soil problems when you do that?
No, we had it tested. We had people come in to take a look at it. What these tanks are, they're double lined, so the leak was actually coming from the outside in, not the gasoline going out, from what I understand.
So there was no contamination.
There's no contamination, no fines, and we were able to take care of it.
Okay.
I also report on the general management area. This is the org chart for all the departments reporting to the president and general manager. We also have changes in this department as well. We pulled one of the employees over from E&O facilities manager to put facilities maintenance to put it under this department. So that's driving some of these increases. The decrease in materials and supplies is a result of breaking out corporate communications, and Chris now handles all of the dues, the corporate dues and sponsorships. So, and he'll be reporting on his area in a minute. Here are the changes in the Department 17 general management area, and we have already discussed the emergency staging area and employee pavilion of $384,000 increase. Building Lackey Service Center increase, we have $25,000 in there. We want to add another $25,000, and then the employee walking trail. We have money in the budget that we haven't done anything with because the field out here, you know, we had all that dirt, and we were using that for the new Lackey Center. Because of the pavilion and having to increase the retention pond, we would have to increase the dollars for the trail as well, the walking trail. So we added 20 there, and then Jim already identified the $115,000 that we've taken out of the budget for that wall that we're no longer going to need. So those are the changes to the capital. And
so is this when we discuss the...
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So, I guess I've got a real problem with an emergency staging area and employee pavilion. I feel like we've got a brand new facility out here, which if we end up having to stage a large number of people could be used for that purpose. And as far as an employee pavilion, I don't see how that helps our ratepayers. So I have a real problem with upwards of $500,000 for, in my way of thinking, a very self-serving facility.
Director Urbina, do you have a comment? Doctor, do you have a comment?
You indicated that we need to expand the retention. You have a cost in here for that?
That's included in that figure, yes.
No, it's 384 instead of...
It's an increase of 384 over the original estimate of 165, for a total of 549. But it does include the expansion of the...
Say that again? This is...
He's showing you the changes, which it was in the original budget that you asked us to expand upon. We originally brought this to you at 165, and you asked us to expand the project, and we did, and we also recognized the need for retention. That expansion and the need for retention, it cost another $384,000. For the project.
So we adjusted the budget for that other project. For
what's the total? What's the total cost of that project?
$549,000.
So it is over half a million dollars.
This second thing is that I didn't realize until the discussion earlier that this was a project that was recommended by Reginald, our chairman. And it's a shame he's not here, but I think somewhat like... Ms. Thacker here, that it's an expense now that it's gotten so expensive that we should defer, at least at this time. But I would still like we did with the other, maybe have it in the budget or have it out of the budget to be fair to put it back in with him present. That's all I'm saying. I would say I'm just being out of fairness.
Yes, Director Vigna.
Well, my concern is I expressed it the last time. I was not in agreement the last time. So obviously I continue to be more in disagreement now that it became more expensive. And I guess Director Tucker was right. I mean, we already have a brand new staging area that is beautiful, big, and comfortable, and I think we can use it. And I believe the employee pavilion, to me, it serves the purpose for whatever employee wants to use it for their own picnics or whatever it is that they use it for.
Already, yeah. So I need probably a motion to take it out of the budget if that's what you want to do.
I'll move it, yeah, or she can move it.
It's been moved and seconded. Any other discussion?
Well, would you want it on the agenda for next month, since Reginald? Sorry, what the action you're taking is okay. This is discussion, so.
Yeah, we're just—it's a discussion of the motion.
Well, I don't know that you need to add anything, but okay. Except to instruct the staff that if he needs to have a word in it, I suppose.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'm for it.
Okay, it passes. So, and if Reggie wants feels strongly about it, we'll be glad to listen to him next time. So.
You can't bring it back.
That's correct. Only one of you could bring it back because you voted on the successful motion.
Yes, but it can be brought back.
Yeah,
you said it couldn't be brought back
by Reginald.
No, we didn't say that, but we can listen to Reggie and we can bring it back.
Sure.
Oh, you absolutely. Can bring it back. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
But he can't put it back on the agenda. So
no, that's. If it's important to him, I'd be glad to listen to what he has to say. But the majority of us don't feel that it's worth over okay. $500,000. Thank you, Joe.
Okay.
The last slide I have. Going the wrong way. Is the Board of Directors travel and training? All of the conferences are listed there. And the total budget for the travel is $37,700. Good. Go ahead.
Any questions other than what we've already done to them?
Okay.
Thanks, Jim. Human Resources, Wilbur's back again.
Back again. Thank you very much. No changes to the org structure since the directional meeting. We are slightly up in fringe benefits and contractual services. But as you can see, the overall reduction is 30% and 29% for a total department expenditures linked to the transfer of corporate communications out of our department. And we have one capital item that was a replacement vehicle for myself. And that concludes my presentation.
Have you gotten it yet?
Did you get it?
Have you gotten your new car yet?
I've not gotten it yet.
I didn't think so because I saw the car you were driving, and that's not a new car.
Yeah, it's an old tank, but I'm not pushing it yet, and so hopefully I get the car coming. It's in the budget. It's in the budget.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon.
I will say this is our Office of Corporate Communications, Chris Kent, for the record.
There's our organizational chart, and this is our O&M overview. So for the first time that we're showing this, Wilbur showed you where the dollars came from in transferring to that new area. Capital expenditures, nothing for the current year. In 17, we also have a vehicle replacement. And the emerging project that we brought back to the board and Jim alluded to in terms of a corporate overview video, the board asked to bring back, if there was a way that we could tighten that. And we talked to one of the vendors that we currently use, and we're able to achieve some savings in terms of creative things that we think we can do for that emerging project. And then our community sponsorships, we're recommending for 2017 a total of $266,559. And the formula that the board established in terms of kind of benchmarking that with the cost of postage, the cap for that fund it would be at $343,764 for this next fiscal year. So you can see we're well below below that, and you were provided a detailed list of the, of those sponsorships. And then our final capital, the capital requests that have come through our capital campaign funding, we have the fifth of five payments to the Boys and Girls Club of Central Florida in next year's budget.
Are there any questions?
That last one starting this year.
Ending.
This is 2017 will be the final payment.
70.
Yes.
Any other questions? Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
Let me ask you one thing, though, Chris. You have leeway in this because you've got some leeway with people coming in to ask you for, like, just like the guardian ad litem. That's not in your budget at this point. So you have some leeway to be able to add people?
Well, correct. And that list that we provided is strictly placeholders based on previous requests.
Right.
If a organization has two consecutive years, then we go ahead and add that as a line item just so you don't just see a lump sum of money. You're actually seeing how it's dispersed.
Right.
But it is on a first-come, first-served basis. So as those requests come through to the board and through my office, then we just accommodate those first come, first serve.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay. That's the end of the departmental budgets. We're here, the attorney.
Well, Madam Chair and board members, good evening. I have just one item for the board. Just an update on the energy bill, the comprehensive energy bill that was it's been passed by both houses. As I reported last time, it's in conference. It's still, they've not set a conference schedule to discuss it. So there's concern by some that it may not get heard at all. My biggest concern with the bill, it's on the House side, is the Castor Amendment, which has mandates about reimbursing net metering customers and making our jobs harder to protect our customers that don't net meter. So I'll keep you posted on that if it moves, and that's the only thing I have for the pleasure of the board.
All right, General Manager Jim Welsh.
And you have before you the reminders has actually been sent out to you, and that's all I have, Madam Chairperson.
Okay, and we have directors. Director Urbina, do you have something to say this evening?
No, I enjoy very much the new facility. Very nice. Turned out to be beautiful. And so that's it.
Dr. Thacker.
I have one little thing that I ran into. It's actually from Duke Energy. It's called third-party notification. And it's a simple little form that people would fill out if they wanted to, so that people that are in and out of town or people that are forgetful and don't pay their bill before their power
services
is cut off, there would be a third party that would be notified. The third party is clearly not responsible for the bill.
Just for notification.
For notification. And I thought, if we had a way, it's a simple little thing. There may be lots of reasons not to do it, but if it's a voluntary sort of thing, I thought it might be worth looking at.
Well, we'll look at it thoroughly and either proceed or come back and tell you why we advise not to proceed on it.
Yeah.
I think there'd be elderly people that may not that need somebody to look out for them. They need to be notified.
Absolutely.
I think
it
sounds like a very good idea.
I think we should be able to probably bring that back to you in July. Wouldn't you think? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Director Gant.
Good idea. Thank you.
I think I've said enough today.
Are you sure? I just have to thank everybody today for being so good and behaving themselves.
Okay.
So I couldn't. And thank the staff for everything they do. They did a They do a wonderful job all the time. And again, we have a wonderful facility out there that was great to see. Thanks, everybody, and meeting's adjourned.